All right, so have you ever thought about like those big criminal cases? You know, the ones you see in the news, like a huge drug bust or a cybercrime ring taken down.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And they always talk about these sprawling networks with all these different players, right? Smugglers and distributors and all these people working together to pull off something illegal. But it kind of makes you wonder, like, from a legal standpoint, can you really lump all those people together under one big conspiracy charge?
Yeah, that's a great question. And actually, it's something courts have been wrestling with for decades.
Really?
Yeah.
I guess it makes sense that these kinds of criminal networks aren't exactly a new thing.
Exactly. And there's this really important case from way back in 1939 that kind of set the stage for how we understand these big sprawling conspiracies.
1939. Wow. Okay, so what was this case all about?
It's called United States v. Bruno.
United States v. Bruno. Okay.
And it was a Second Circuit ruling that still has a major impact today. Basically, it all started with this massive drug trafficking operation.
Okay, so like a classic drug ring.
Yeah, but the way it was structured was pretty interesting.
Oh, how so?
Well, they had all these different groups involved, right? Like, first you had the smugglers bringing the drugs in from overseas.
Okay.
Then you had a separate group of middlemen who would buy the drugs from the smugglers.
Huh?
And then finally, there were like two separate groups of retailers, one operating in New York and another down in Texas and Louisiana.
Wow, so it's like a whole chain of people.
Exactly. It's like a drug pipeline.
Okay, so how did this end up in court? Did they catch all these different groups?
They did. The government went after a ton of people, something like 88 individuals, all charged with conspiracy to import, sell, and possess narcotics.
88 people, that's huge. So they were all tried together.
Yeah, they were all indicted together as part of this one massive conspiracy.
Even though they were operating in all these different states and had these distinct roles.
Yeah, and that's where things get interesting.
Okay, so I'm guessing Bruno was one of the 88.
He was part of that New York retail group.
Gotcha. So what was their defense? Why did they think they weren't all part of one big conspiracy?
Their main argument was that there wasn't really a direct connection between all these different groups.
Well,
Like,
they didn't all know each other or work together directly.
exactly. They argued that there was no evidence showing that, say, the smugglers were in direct contact with the retailers in New York or Louisiana.
Right, like why would the smugglers need to know the street dealer?
Exactly.
So they were basically saying, hey, we're just doing our own thing. We're not part of some big mastermind plan.
Exactly. And they pointed to the fact that those two retail groups in New York and down south, they weren't coordinating with each other either.
So it was like these separate little conspiracies going on.
Right. They argued that the government was trying to lump them all together unfairly, even though there wasn't this single agreement binding everyone.
Okay, so what did the court say? Did they buy that argument?
Well, the jury convicted Bruno and a lot of the others on this single conspiracy charge.
Really? So even with the lack of direct contact, they still found them all guilty of being part of the same scheme.
Yes, and this is where the concept of interdependence comes into play.
Okay, interdependence. What's that all about?
It's the idea that even if all these groups weren't directly communicating, their success was still dependent on each other.
So, like, even though the smugglers didn't know the retailers, they still needed the retailers to actually sell the drugs and make the whole operation profitable.
Precisely. The prosecution argued that everyone involved understood this, even if they weren't all talking to each other.
So basically, they were all in it together, whether they knew each other's names or not.
Right. And the Second Circuit agreed.
So they upheld the convictions.
They did. They said that it was enough that the smugglers knew someone had to sell the drugs and that the retailers knew someone had to import them.
Okay, that makes sense. But how do they explain that legally? Like, what was their reasoning?
Well, they basically said it doesn't matter if there's no overarching agreement or central plan. What matters is that everyone involved was part of this venture, this larger scheme, where the success of each part depended on the success of the whole.
So, like, they were all links in a chain.
Exactly.
That's a good analogy. So, even if the smugglers never met the guys selling drugs on the street in New York, they were still part of the same chain.
Right.
Okay, so no secret handshake or big meeting needed. As long as your operation depends on another part succeeding and you know it, you're in the conspiracy.
Pretty much. The key takeaway from Bruno is that direct communication between all the members isn't absolutely necessary.
Okay.
What matters is that they have this shared unlawful goal, and they understand that the whole criminal enterprise needs all these different parts to function.
So in Bruner's case, he might not have known the smugglers, but he knew he was selling illegal drugs and that those drugs had to come from somewhere.
Exactly. And that was enough to connect him to the overall conspiracy.
Wow, that's pretty wild. So this Bruno case, it basically created this legal framework for treating these big, sprawling criminal networks as one giant conspiracy.
It did. And it's been incredibly influential in how we prosecute these types of cases ever since.
But I imagine it's not without its critics, right? Like, doesn't this potentially give prosecutors a lot of power to go after people who might be on the fringes of these operations?
Yeah, absolutely. There are definitely concerns about fairness and proportionality.
Like, is it really fair to punish someone who's just a small-time player the same way you'd punish the kingpins who are calling the shots?
Exactly. Like in Bruno's case, he was just a retailer, but he got caught up in this huge conspiracy case. Some legal scholars argue that this broad interpretation of conspiracy can lead to overcriminalization, where people who might not even fully understand the scope of the operation get swept up in these charges.
So it's like guilt by association in a way.
Kind of. It raises questions about how far we should stretch this concept of interdependence.
Okay, so there are definitely some gray areas here.
Definitely.
Now, you mentioned something earlier about wheel and chain conspiracies. Can you explain those a bit more? How does Bruno fit into that?
Sure. So in a chain conspiracy, it's like a literal chain. Each group's actions are linked to the next group in a sequence.
Like in Bruno, the smugglers to the middlemen to the retailers.
Exactly. And the illegal goods or activities, they flow along this chain.
Okay, makes sense. And what about a wheel conspiracy?
A wheel conspiracy is different. It has a central figure or hub, and then all these spokes radiating outwards.
So like a mastermind at the center and then all these separate groups connected to them.
Right. Each spoke might be doing their own thing, but they're all ultimately connected to that central hub.
Gotcha. So Bruno is a classic example of a chain conspiracy.
Yes.
Okay, so going back to Bruno himself, what kind of evidence did the prosecution actually need to show to prove he was part of this chain, even though he didn't know the smugglers?
They had to show that Bruno knew that the drugs he was selling were part of a larger illegal operation.
Okay, so they didn't have to prove he knew the smugglers personally, but just that he understood that the drugs had to come from somewhere.
Exactly. The court said that it was reasonable to infer that someone selling drugs on that scale would know that there had to be an upstream source involved.
Right, like he couldn't have thought those drugs just magically appeared.
Exactly.
Now, I also remember reading something about another guy, Iacono, who was also convicted in this case. But then his conviction was overturned.
Yes, Iacono's case is interesting because it shows us the limits of the Bruno ruling.
Oh, how so?
Ronnie Iacono's case, the only evidence linking him to the conspiracy was that he'd received some money orders from some of the other guys involved.
So like financial transactions.
Right. But the court said that wasn't enough to prove that he was knowingly participating in the drug trafficking operation.
Just because he got some money orders didn't mean he knew what it was all about.
Exactly. They said there wasn't enough evidence to connect him to that shared criminal goal.
So it's not just enough to have some tangential connection to the conspiracy. There has to be real evidence of knowing involvement.
Right.
That's a really important distinction. So this Bruno ruling from 1939, it seems like it's still incredibly relevant today, especially with all the globalized crime and online stuff going on.
It is. The principles from Bruno are used all the time to prosecute modern criminal enterprises. Things like drug cartels, organized crime, cybercrime.
Yeah, I can see how it would apply to all sorts of things.
Like take a drug cartel operating across multiple countries. You might have people growing the drugs in one place, smuggling them across borders, distributing them in different cities, and then selling them on the streets.
Right, and they might not all know each other or even communicate directly.
Exactly, but they're all part of the same operation, and their success depends on each other.
So under Bruno, they could all be charged as one big conspiracy.
Yes.
And it's the same with online crime, right?
Absolutely. You could have hackers,
malware
developers, people stealing data, people laundering money, all working together online without ever meeting in person.
It's like a virtual chain conspiracy.
Exactly. And Bruno provides the legal basis for treating those kinds of networks as a single conspiracy.
But going back to what we talked about earlier about fairness, doesn't that get even more complicated with these modern cases where people might have very different levels of involvement?
It does. That's a huge debate right now.
Yeah. Like, is it fair to treat a low-level participant in a cybercrime ring the same as the mastermind who created the whole thing?
Exactly. Even if their actions are technically part of the same conspiracy, their level of culpability and the harm they cause might be very different.
So it seems like Bruno, while it's been incredibly influential, also raises a lot of questions about how we apply conspiracy law in a fair and just way.
It definitely does.
So to sum all this up, the big takeaway from Bruno is that a single conspiracy can exist even if the different groups involved don't directly communicate or know each other. The key is that they share that common goal and they depend on each other's actions to succeed.
That's a great summary.
And in Bruno, the court found that the smugglers, the middlemen, and the retailers were all part of one big conspiracy because they each understood that their role was essential to the whole drug trafficking scheme.
Exactly.
So the next time you see one of those news stories about a big criminal network being taken down, think about Bruno. Think about whether they're being treated as one massive conspiracy or a bunch of smaller ones and what that means for the people involved.
It's a good reminder that these cases are often a lot more complex than they might seem at first glance.
Definitely. And it makes you wonder where exactly we should draw the line when it comes to defining the scope of a conspiracy, especially with all the new forms of crime emerging all the time.
It's a constantly evolving area of law that raises some really important questions about fairness, accountability, and the reach of the criminal justice system.
Definitely some food for thought.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks for diving into this with me.
It was my pleasure.
This was a fascinating look at the complexities of conspiracy law and the legacy of United States v. Bruno. Until next time, keep those legal minds churning.